G'day, I'm Eric, and welcome to episode 364 of Eric Pod. Eric Pod is my talk podcast, where I basically talk about what I like to when I feel like doing it. And today's episode comes to you from the car again on my way to work. At the moment, it is Friday, the 1st of June, so that's, according to most people, the first day of the Australian winter. And there's 1 month to go for the Australian financial year. The Australian financial year ends at the end of June. And so the 1st of July is the start of the new financial year. Still no news yet about me returning to driving trains. It's only been a couple of days since the health providers had the report. So we might have an update about that towards the end of the episode. I'm going to start the episode by talking about an awesome piece of feedback that I received during the week from Scott from the Uncommon Sense podcast, one of the plane dudes. And Scott and I have known each other for a while now. You know, we talk backwards and forwards to each other sometimes, and, you know, listen to each other's shows and all of that sort of stuff. Having said that, I am a little bit behind on my podcast listening, believe it or not. At the moment, I'm usually only listening to podcasts to and from work, on the way to and from work, and then maybe as I go to sleep sort of thing. Definitely not as much since I haven't been driving trains, because I'd always be listening to podcasts pretty much the whole shift. So, you know, circumstances change, of course, and listening habits change, and I am behind on many podcasts listening, including my own. So Scott gave me some audio feedback. After this song, which will be very relevant to one of the things that Scott's actually talking about, I'll insert Scott's comment, and then we can talk about it, because it's been very relevant to what I've been talking about. Coming up is a song from In Element. They're an Argentinian metal band. And the reason why I'm playing this sort of music today is that it actually relates very well to Scott's comments.
Well, hello, Eric. Long time no talk. Today is the 30th of May, and you wanted a time check, and you were talking about how you're sort of slowing down Eric Pod podcasts, and Tom was saying how it was because of lack of feedback, and you said you'd had that too, and then you called for a time check. Well, I think the oldest podcast is the one I'm listening to now. I started with the latest and worked my way back. The latest one is pretty close to the time I'm at now. And the one I'm finishing, which is the oldest, is somewhere back in March. I think it's like towards the end of March, Easter weekend, somewhere in there. So there you go. But I'm pretty all caught up at this point. So a lot has transpired in the interim between between when I've really sent a voice file last in this, or gotten any personal voice files from you, which I wouldn't mind getting a few back just to catch up on things that you can't talk about on the podcast, perhaps. But you know, you've lost your hosting and got new hosting, as have I. I went with GoDaddy. I was already with GoDaddy. Basically, I just upped the plan, and I upped it big time and got a deal. And that was what made it worthwhile, was to buy, you know, like 5 years worth of it and then get a really good deal off of it because of how much, you know, get like 30% off, I think it was. And it came out really cheap, where I'm getting infinite bandwidth and 250 meg of storage. I'm sorry, gig of storage, infinite bandwidth for downloads. So Not that I'm ever going to get them close to that, but... And all for about... what did it come out to? I think it was like $6 or $7 a month when I did the math out, divided by how many months I got over the years. It was a good deal. And it hosts all my domains at once. So it was nice. It was a good solution. Now, what I need to do now is get WordPress going on the main domain, PodTeacher. Right now I'm kind of sharing plain dudes in my own personal podcast. And in reality, it's what I kind of intended was for the PodTeacher site to contain all of my podcasts. And so I really intended for it to be there. And Plain Dudes would have it, but it would be a discrete feed. And so, anyway, that's kind of how things landed. As far as pod fading and pod dying, there's been a lot of that that's gone on in the last year. Certainly Tom is pod fading, but he's not dead yet. And you've pod faded a bit, but you're not dead yet. And Michael Moss pod faded and pod died. One of the other plain dudes, and he just pod resurrected. Moss Growth Podcast. But there has been a lot of that, podcasts that pod fade and pod die and then sometimes come back. But a number of the podcasts that I've listened to over the years have in fact pod faded and pod died. It's kind of too bad. On getting blood taken. I don't know if this is of any interest to you, but do you know what the term is for the type of doctor or person that takes your blood? You know what the term is for their job? They say, what do you do for a living? Now, they could say, well, I take blood for a living, but there's actually a single word. You know, like, I'm a mechanic. I'm an engineer. Whatever. You know, well, there is a doctor term for that. You know, like, if someone says, I'm a surgeon, you know what he is. You know, say, I'm a neurologist. Well, what they are, do you know the name for that? It's a phlebotomist. That doesn't seem to fit it, but that's the word. I didn't know if you'd be interested or not. But, yeah, I had the same thing one time. They had to poke me twice to get blood. Usually that doesn't happen. And I was told that I looked dehydrated, just like yourself. And yes, now what I make sure I do is drink one of those bottles of water, and maybe then some, just to make sure, and then they never miss then. So that's the secret. That's the dirty secret. Yeah, you're right, they don't really telegraph that too well, do they? But I found that to be true of the medical industry in general. There's a lot of things you just have to... You are your own best doctor if you take the time to educate yourself. And that's the thing. A lot of people don't. I'm really amazed and glad to hear that you so completely embrace the CPAP machine. A lot of people fight that, don't want anything to do with it. And I think that's what's getting you back on the job and back in the pink of health. You're certainly to be congratulated on that. And what else? Just a bunch of little things I had for comments as I listened over the podcast. Oh, the metal bands. You know, I've probably mentioned this myself. I'm not into metal music or death metal at that. But I try to take an interest. And one of the things I just got curious about was how in the world they do what they do in death metal. It sounds like Satan himself screaming. And is that how it started? Do you know? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the origins of this type of singing and the music. Why they call it death metal? Is it all about, is it satanic? Or did it even start that way? Is it just a misconception? Why do they sound like the devil himself when they sing? You know, how'd that come about? But I wondered, how the heck do they even sing like that? So I went on YouTube and I looked up some videos that I found of people demonstrating exactly how they do it. And then the drumming got me too. And I'm listening to your podcast. You've got your metal music in the background turned down. And the part that really stands out is the drumming. It sounds like somebody shooting off a machine gun here and there and here and there, you know, da 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 da. And I thought, that's so weird. I said, is that real drumming? Are they actually drumming that fast? Or is that, you know, maybe they get an electronic drum set that they just operate somehow. But researching that, I find it's real drumming and actually how they do it. Man, you know, my brother was a sound man for many years, and he told me an event he went to, and they had a metal band there, and he said he didn't appreciate the music, but he sure appreciated all the work they put into it. I got a feeling that people in metal bands and death metal bands probably burn out at a far higher rate than do other types of music. Can you deny or confirm that? You know, what I'm thinking is that style of singing is going to blow your voice out, but good. And in fact, one of the people that was doing demonstrations said he was demonstrating it after having his vocal operation. And he was a young man, too young in my opinion to have a vocal operation. But I'm thinking that this probably blows your voice out pretty good. Like I said, you could probably confirm or deny that. And then the drummers, oh my God, I mean, the speed with which they have to pedal those drums to get those double, triple beats that are going on, I can only imagine how that must tire them, if nothing else. I would think you don't have any drummers in death metal or metal that drum at that speed who are in their 50s and 60s. If they are, they're an extremely rare bird. They're not the rule. They're way outside the bell curve, would you not say? Whereas there's plenty of old drummers in classic bands, but they don't drum that way. So there's a few things I felt like I learned. But like I say, I don't really appreciate the music because I don't quite get it. That's just me. Let me pause and see if there's something else I thought of. Okay, well, probably not a lot more comments for this public note here. As you know, back last summer, towards July, August, somewhere in there, I was sending you notes and telling you how envious I was of your time off and just how unbelievable it is compared to here, to have that kind of time off and to be able to have the affluence and time off to be able to do the kind of trip that you had in Europe. That was just amazing, and I'm still very envious of that. I know that I'm never going to get the chance to do something like that, and you get to do it. And but then afterwards, even more time off, not the way I'd like to have it, but time off due to the medical diagnosis. And I think, like yourself, I'd get sick of being at home too eventually and want to go back to some kind of work, something constructive, something I loved. So, but you know, a lot of people out there, you know, getting what you in the position you were in, would probably have just sat there and enjoyed it, and maybe even tried to stay on that as long as they possibly could. So again, another reason, you know, you're ultimately to be commended in so many ways for your values in that regard. I'm going to cut this note short here, and I make another quick one. That's a private note. And so for this note, it's goodbye.
Thank you to Scott for those comments, and also thank you to Ian from Canada, who has been giving me some feedback via Facebook as well. And the first part of the feedback that Scott mentioned about the whole sleep apnea and work thing, these comments equally apply to Ian as well as to Scott. Now, there are people who do rot the system, who do treat it as a bit of a vacation. Hey, I treat it as a bit of a vacation as well. When this happened, I tried to look at the positive things and thinking, well, hey, I can get to do whatever I want during summer, have a great time, and everything like that. But unlike some people, my intention has always been to return back to driving trains. You know, I have seen other people who have the same condition that I have, who are back driving trains, and you wouldn't even know that they've got it. Of course, usual work disclaimer applies here. Whereas there are some people who, you know, treat it as an extended holiday. They don't necessarily help themselves. They don't do the treatment. In my case, the CPAP machine. And yeah, as you know, a lot of people have been asking me since I've been back at my place of employment, you know, what's been happening, you know, why am I on light duties, all that sort of stuff. And the majority of the time, I'll tell them honestly, hey, I've got sleep apnea, I'm being treated, I feel a lot better for it. And, you know, it's going to be great to be driving trains again, hopefully sooner rather than later. There are some people who are in the job for a while, and the only reason they still stay in the job is the money, not necessarily the actual job itself, like, you know, driving the trains, getting people safely from point A to point B. I really enjoy that aspect. Of course, I enjoy the money too, but, you know, I enjoy the movement facilitation, getting people from point A to point B, whereas other people just do it because it's a well-paying job. And if they can get the same money sitting on their backside rather than actually doing the job, some people will do it. Now, when I talk about getting myself cleared to go back to driving duties, I should point out, if I haven't already, and I'm pretty sure I have, that I've actually I actually went back to the specialist myself. I made the appointment to go back to the specialist and say, hey mate, you know, how am I going? Am I, in your opinion, fit to go back to work? His opinion agreed with mine, and the process is ongoing. I know on one of Ian's Facebook comments, he mentioned about working on the stations is a waste, and that the drivers' union should be very upset about it, and that, you know, I should be driving trains. And while I agree with him that I should have been driving trains well before now, it's nearly 2 months. Actually, probably will be close to 2 months to the day by the time you're actually listening to this. And the process could have been a lot quicker. And as Ian said, and as Sean was said as well, you know, the process could have been quicker. Sean commented last week that with his job, he can understand how people screw things up. And of course, I'm paraphrasing Sean's comment. He can understand how people screw up faxing things, ringing people, and all of that sort of stuff because of his job, where he basically works for a telephone answering service. So he can understand that. And to be quite honest with Ian and everybody else, I quite enjoyed working on the station. It's what I initially did when I joined the railways over 18 years ago. I really enjoyed it. Other drivers probably wouldn't have enjoyed it, those who don't have that background, but I did. And it's probably more productive in some ways than the tasks that I'm doing now, just handing out documents to crew. You know, mind you, you know, it is a job that I've been enjoying, and I've been, you know, helping the sign-on clerks, you know, do their job and all of that sort of stuff. But ultimately, my job is a train driver. I want to be able to do that, and hopefully very soon I will be able to do that. A lot of people outside the job have a misconception about the union. I am a member of the union. I have been the entire time. And the main reason that I am a member of the union is because if something goes pear-shaped, I want some people, some industry people, to be able to back me up and support me in, and also, you know, things like conditions and all of that sort of stuff. People outside of the industry have got this perception that the union is strong. That's not the case at all, in my opinion. I've been working for the railways for over 18 years, and we have not had a single full-day strike here in Sydney during that entire time. Whereas if you go back to the 1970s, 1980s, especially, when they brought in the XPT, when they took the brake vans, or the Americans and Canadians might call them cabooses, off the freight trains, and they took the guards off the freight trains and only had a what the Americans would call an engineer and the fireman up the front, and took the guard or the conductor off the brake van / caboose. And when they introduced the X-Wing passenger train, there were so many disputes in that period, and at times there'd be no trains for, 24 hours, sometimes, 36, 48 hours. I think it was even a 72-hour strike, where there were no trains throughout the state of New South Wales at all. Whereas now, we've had maybe 3 or 4 days of no trains in the off-peak. There's been times where there's been stop work meetings and all of that sort of stuff, fare free days, transit officers not issuing infringement notices, that sort of thing. But when it comes to at midnight there will be no trains, midnight Friday until midnight Saturday as an example, that hasn't happened. There's not a lot of options available when it comes down. Okay, I'm a driver, I can't drive, so they have to find me something else to do. This week, I am doing administrative office type work. Last week, I was doing station work, till the middle of last week. And once upon a time, Ian's point would have been especially valid, because once upon a time, if I, as a train guard or train driver, was injured, but still able to do something, there would be no way I'd be allowed to work on a station at all. There'd be a massive demarcation dispute. Whereas now, stations and train crew are more aligned. We're in the same service group, more closely aligned, and it's not a nasty no-no. And that's probably another thing that the unions have pretty much let slide, amongst a lot of other things. But once upon a time, I would never have been able to do the week and a half working on the stations again that I totally enjoyed. So yes, I am looking forward to getting back on the job and being able to drive a train, and hopefully even by the time this episode comes out, maybe I might be driving a train, who knows? You'll just have to wait and see, just like I'll have to wait and see. But attitude, as Scott was saying, and as Ian has been referencing, attitude is very important. My attitude is a very positive attitude, even though, Scott, I do listen to dark metal. Talk about that in a sec. The person's attitude makes a big difference. My attitude is that, if I, try and fight it and try and basically do what I want and not try to get back, especially in the climate that we're sort of looking at the moment, the company could quite easily say to me, okay, Irk, we've employed you as a train driver, you're not doing it, you're fired. That's an extreme example. And there'd have to be a lot more time involved, but I have heard of people who have been medically retired due to, various medical things, and I'm not even 40 yet, so I can't afford to be medically retired. I have a lifestyle that I've grown accustomed to. I enjoy my job, I enjoy earning money, and that sort of thing. I can't afford for the next 20 years to be, on government benefits. I don't want to be on government benefits, for the simple fact is that, sure, wearing a mask at night is uncomfortable and all that sort of stuff. Once you do it for a while, it's not as bad as you might think. You sort of, really don't have a choice. You get used to it. And I have noticed the change. So hopefully by the end of the episode, who knows, some good news. Move to the second part of Scott's comment, where he's talking about one of my favourite subjects, not necessarily on Earth, but when we're talking about metal music. And you know, things like metal and all that sort of stuff. Now, I know what I like, and I'm no major student of the genre, you know, where I know all of the origins and all of that sort of stuff. In music, we're very quick to categorise and classify things in genres and subgenres. Like, if you think about just metal in Sydney, for instance, the amount of subgenres that you'd have, and you ask a band, you know, what genres do you put yourself in if you've got the option? And sometimes it depends on the distribution service that you're using. Like, Airplay Direct as a classic example, one of my major music suppliers. When it comes to metal, they have metal, then death metal, heavy metal, industrial, and that's pretty much it. Whereas if you go to somewhere which is more focused on metal, you'd have genres such as speed metal, thrash metal, melodic metal, death metal, black metal, metalcore, and all of that sort of stuff. There's so many different styles, so many different genres just within the genre of metal. And as I've said before, especially on the music shows, sometimes the line between hard rock and metal are extremely blurred. There's some bands who don't like using the term, they don't like to use the term metal, as a for instance. And so Scott was talking about drummers. Now, I'm not a drummer. I wouldn't mind being a drummer. I don't have the room, the time, or anything like that to be a drummer. And I don't think my mum would be too impressed if I brought home a set of drums, not that I've got a space to use them. But over the last couple of years, I've got to know some drummers well and respect their different styles. For instance, we've got Brad from Foundry Road and David Jink. There's Alan, formerly of Sen Itself, now with Dawn Heist. There's Sarah from Amadeus, Pete from Domino, Reese from Hard as Nails, Sam from Smoke and Mirrors. Quite a few others out there as well. Aaron from Psycho Sapien and Under the Eight Ball. And to me, in a metal band, you have to have a drummer. Scott was asking about, you know, do they use electronics? And there are some bands that use a little bit of electronics. They tend to be more the industrial bands, like the Creptor Children. They do use electronics behind them, but not necessarily for the drums. I just heard a really awesome drum part in this song that I'm trying to find to sort of illustrate what Scott was talking about. There's only been one band, I think this is it. There's only been one metal band that I've seen over the last couple of years that doesn't use a drummer, but they use drum samples. Now, I know that on some occasions, some drummers do use electronic drums to practice with. I haven't seen one on stage at a metal gig using electronic drums. I know Bradford Foundry Road uses electronic drums to rehearse on occasions, but he uses the real thing at the show. And keep in mind that most of the bands that I see, the indie, the underground, the unsigned guys, call them what you will, they're usually only on stage at a maximum of 40 to 45 minutes. They're usually on stage for a maximum of 40, 45 minutes. And at the end of it, they are absolutely spent. Even if they've been drumming for a long time and they're in condition, you know, they may rehearse once a week with the band, plus what they do at home. I know there are some drummers who they only drum at gigs and at rehearsal, whereas others practice in between band rehearsals as well. And yeah, they're absolutely spent. Sometimes you watch some of the drummers during the sets and you think that they're going to pass out. And, you know, they're very, very interesting guys. Very interesting guys to work. But as Scott found out for himself, the majority of the work done by drummers is done by them themselves. You know, using their drum kit, lots of beats per minute, lots of action. They're always moving their hands and their feet, and some of it does sound spectacular. It's just a shame sometimes with some of these songs that you actually can't listen to the track separately and, for instance, just hear the drums or just hear the guitars, because sometimes the guitars and the drums, you can lose one or the other. But how they do it is absolutely amazing. I've spoken to some vocalists and I've seen the vocalists where how hard the drummer starts the song, how fast the drummer starts the song, determines the pace of the song. Now, you might remember last week's episode, I played the song Crazy Horse by Smoke and Mirrors, who are a hard rock band. The version of Crazy Horse that you heard on last week's show, that was the studio version. Now, as I mentioned at the time, the live version is about double the speed. Double the speed of that studio version. Now, why they've done it the way that they have on the studio version that you heard last week was that sometimes when you do it live, especially Smoke and Mirrors, they love to perform this song at the end of their set, at the end of a 40, 45 minute set. And, you know, Emma, their vocalist, she is absolutely spent by the end of it as well. The song is that fast, and depending how Sam, Alex and Matt play it, they could play it really, really fast. Sometimes she doesn't have time to get all the words in and to be as clear as she'd like to be on her vocal delivery, because she's racing the band. So in the studio version, they've purposely slowed the song down so all the words are crystal clear, so Em doesn't have to rush through the vocals to get to the next solo bit or whatever. But pacing, timing and rhythm can be very dependent on live on stage on your energy levels and how the band decide to do it. I know Erica from Domino, she was another hard rock band. She was telling me the same sort of thing, that on a particular song, it depends on how fast. Sometimes it's a guitarist, sometimes it's a drummer, sometimes it's a combination. How fast they actually go determines how fast the vocalist has to go, and the vocalist basically has to go with it to keep up and to make the song sound as it should. Now, when it comes to the different types of metal, sometimes you can't understand them, and even I can't understand them. This band would be a classic example, In Element. They're from Argentina, so they, at times, may be singing in a language other than English. But sometimes it doesn't really matter. You can have people from the Scandinavian countries, which are very heavily into black metal and death metal, they might be singing in their home language, but because of the way that they're delivering it, you might not even understand what they say. And to a lot of people in the metal scene, they don't care. I know with the stuff that I listen to, a lot of the more melodic stuff where you can hear the vocals and understand them, bands such as Foundry, Rodan and Modus are two classic examples of that. You first hear the vocals, especially in Foundry Road's case, and you might think, there's no words here, it's just one guy continually growling and that sort of stuff. But if you listen to the tracks a few times, and if you have the words in front of you, like my mum did, you can understand what's going on. Like listening to this band now in Element, I can catch the occasional phrase in English, but overall, it's the whole sound of it. It's the sound of the drums, the sound of the guitar, the sound of the bass, the sound of the vocals. When it comes to the vocals, there's very few bands that I've seen that use any sort of pedals or effects or anything like that. It's usually the singer themselves. A lot of it comes down to technique, practice and warming up. And they can just turn it on and off at will. They could be having a conversation with you, and the next thing they go on stage and they growl. The biggest example of this locally that I see is Empirical. Their singer Kat, when I first heard her, I couldn't even see her. I was in a car park behind the gig, and I heard this growling coming from the gig, and I thought, oh man, that sounds awesome. Don't know who it is, but it sounds really masculine. And then I've entered the gig, and on stage I've seen this hot blonde chick, very feminine looking. You know, she's got the big boots and the blonde hair and the pigtails and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm like, all of that growling is coming out of your mouth? Then when I saw her the next time, I spent a lot of time looking at her feet, looking on stage, to see if I could see any effects pedals or anything like that. And there was none, it was all her. And at the end, I actually asked her to make a promo, and where she's talking in her normal voice, and she's got a really feminine, girly sort of voice, and then when she growls, and she can just turn it on and off like a tap, it's totally different altogether, when it comes down to it. And there are people, every time Empirical have a gig, they see her and then they hear what comes out of her mouth and they can't believe that it's the same woman. And in actual fact, in some of her songs, she will actually change from growling to quote-unquote normal singing and then go back to growling. Or she'll, you know, do a few songs and then she'll say, "Oh, hi guys, you know, we're a miracle." You know, that's a pretty bad impersonation of Cat's voice, but you get the idea. And people are continually stunned. There are techniques of it. I know Explain from County Road, he told me, I think there's a video you can watch called The Zen of Screaming, from memory. And that gives you great insight to, you know, the whole process and how it's done. And when they come off stage, if they're doing it correctly, it shouldn't really hurt. So I'm going to leave it there. Hopefully over the weekend, before this episode comes out, I can get some opinions from a couple of drummers, and they might be able to give their more professional opinion about that. Anywho, I'm Erk. Back soon, dudes. What you can hear now is rain on the roof at the place of my employment inside one of the sheds. And also there's an interurban train, a VSET, in the middle of getting ready to go into service for the afternoon peak. Heavy rain here in Sydney at the moment. It's Tuesday the 4th of June, no, 5th of June, as I'm recording this. Heavy winds are expected up over 100 kilometres an hour and lots of rain. Hello, it's me. It's Wednesday the 6th of June, 6-6-12, and here's some more ambient noise. This one's for my buddy Albert. Get well soon, buddy. Okay, I'll be back to wrap things up. So I just went for a Millennium train ride, one station from Strathfield to Burwood, and then we had a Waratah train that we heard in the last episode pass by. Night, the 6th of June, and I thought that being a week since I had my medical facts to the, or my medical report, facts the correct number, that I'd have some good news by now. I don't. I think what we just heard there, that little bit of drums with the double kick and all of that sort of stuff, I think that perfectly illustrates what Scott was talking about earlier in the episode. Unfortunately, I didn't get to record the drummers that I wanted to record over the weekend, giving their opinions about drumming and whatnot. But I had a rather extensive series of conversations with Reese, the drummer from Hard as Nails, on the weekend, and he was sharing some of his influences in drumming and all that sort of stuff. And he rest assures me that it's all him. There's no machines or anything like that. I should see if I can find that video that I did of Foundry Road's drummer Brad. Absolutely amazing stuff. So, yeah, absolutely amazing stuff, drumming, and, you know, I'm so excited when it comes to music at the moment, because next month in July I'm going up to Bris Vegas, and I'll be covering the Dead of Winter Fest, which is a day in a hotel, five different stages, over 40 bands on the one day. Don't know how I'm going to be able to see them all, if I'll be able to see them all at all. But it's got a horror theme, it's got a zombie theme, it's got an apocalypse theme, it's, you know, metal, goth, industrial, there's a bit of burlesque. So it's going to be cool. The day before, I've actually been invited to an album launch up on the Gold Coast. So that will be cool. That whole weekend is absolutely going to be cool. Because on Thursday night, I'm going to the Hi-Fi Bar in Sydney. I've already purchased my ticket for this one. And I'm going to see Carnival. That's on the Thursday. At the moment, my plan is go into town, get a hotel, watch Carnival Thursday night, sleep somewhere near the airport in the hotel Thursday night, fly up to Brisbane early-ish on, well, my original plan was to fly to Brisbane early-ish on Friday, just have a relaxing day, check out the city and stuff on Friday night, and then Saturday would be filled up with the Dead of Winter Fest. But now I've been invited to this record launch from Red Bird Records on the Gold Coast. I now fly to the Gold Coast on Friday instead of Brisbane. You know, the difference would be like going to Sydney or going to the central coast of Sydney. That's pretty much, you know, a couple of hours away at the absolute most. That'd be the major difference. And then stay on the Gold Coast Friday night, and then head into Brisbane pretty early on the Saturday, and then basically hang out, probably spend another couple of days in Brisbane and then fly home. The following weekend, I've actually been invited to another metal event, which will be the final metal event for the moment for a Newcastle metal band called War Faction. I've been talking about going up there and checking out the scene there for a couple of weeks, but seeing as though this is going to be the last War Faction bunker party, I'll have to go. So I've got to make some arrangements. First of all, I've got to know what I'm doing at the base of employment. I might actually put in for some leave, and I was thinking that I could, you know, stay up in Bris Vegas and all the Gold Coast for the week, and then come back down to Newcastle, fly down from either I'd have to check out either Brisbane or the Gold Coast. It'd probably be on a regional. So I'd be in Newcastle for the Saturday, and then come home from there. But I've got to figure all that out. That, of course, all depends on what I'm actually doing at work and that sort of thing. Next week, actually, if I don't hear anything by Friday, on Monday is the Queen's birthday holiday, and it's actually not the Queen's actual birthday, but that's the We always celebrate it for some reason or another in Australia in June. The second weekend in June we celebrate it. There's a long weekend on the Monday. So if I'm not at my place of employment on Monday doing driving, I'll have a long weekend. So that'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So that'll be cool. Now that'd be cool if I could. I don't know how this is going to work out, of course, but it'd be cool if they said to me on Friday, "Hey, dude, you're coming back to driving. So now have your long weekend, and then on Tuesday, come and see us. And we'll work out what you have to do." That'd be rather cool. So thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. A little bit different this week, a little bit of work talk, a little bit about me, and a little bit about music as well. All good. If you'd like to give me feedback, and I know Shauno gave me some feedback, thank you Shauno, because of the period of time that's actually passed between the time that I recorded the start of the episode and the time of recording this bit, I can't actually remember if I thanked Shauno originally, but Shauno said to tell me that he thought the Simpsons posters I was talking about on the last episode and the, the health and safety messages that these posters have, he thought that they sounded cool. And I tell you what, there it is, looking around my place of employment at the depot, there's quite a few of them around, so that will be cool. If you want to leave me feedback on any other sort of subject, let me know. One thing I will mention briefly, I was looking on Facebook this afternoon, and I was looking at an old friend of mine, Nathan. Hi, Nathan. If you're still listening, I don't know. He liked the photo, and it was a photo of two plainclothes police, or possibly detectives, in Perth, I think they might have been. Walking down the street, the photo was taken of them from behind, and they were wearing bulletproof vests, and they had a pistol strapped to their thigh, and also a stun gun attached to their belt. And the post from some woman, and I don't know who she is, so I don't know how old she is or whatever, but her comment was basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, "Oh my God, they're wearing bulletproof vests and a stun gun on a Wednesday during the day. Like, oh my God." And comments like that is why we can't have nice things. I was stunned when I read that comment, because seriously, when criminals are going to commit crimes, they don't look at the calendar and think, "Well, okay, if it's Wednesday lunchtime, well, we're going to go into a bank and we're going to do an armed robbery, but if the cops come, we're not going to shoot them because it's Wednesday and it's the middle of the day." If you watch the amount of cop shows that I do from all around the world, you have to be prepared for anything at any time of day or night. Doesn't matter if it's Wednesday lunchtime walking down in the centre of Perth, or whether it be Friday night down King's Cross, or Tuesday afternoon in Compton, in Los Angeles, or, in the middle of Soho in London on a Friday afternoon. It doesn't matter. As a police officer, as any sort of law enforcement, you have to be prepared. And every time you go out as a cop or other law enforcement, you have to have all your tools of the trade with you. And if that is bulletproof vest, and in many jurisdictions it is, sometimes it's visible, like in this photo, and other times it's not visible, like they wear it as body armour under the uniform, so be it. Many police around the world are armed. They are here in Sydney, for instance, but they're not in New Zealand, and they're not around most of the UK. They do have special armed response squads in those areas though. Or if it means a stun gun or a taser, so be it. Every shift you go out, you have to have that piece of equipment. All of your tools, your safety vest for high visibility, your hat, your body armour or your bulletproof vest, or you know, your gun, your handcuffs, you know, your extendable baton, your radio, all that sort of stuff. You've got to have it with you all the time. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes about it. So, geez, some people are ignorant. Anywho, I'm Eric. Thanks for listening. I'm at home. Hope you've enjoyed the episode. ChannelEric.com. Right into web.